It's the Friday postgame show. Welcome to our presentation here. I'm Dave Kohler, Steve-O to my right, and this is the farewell to Dan Evans Nakamura.
What? Where are you going?
Hell. No, I'm going back to Berkeley for, what's the difference these days? I'm going back to Berkeley for-
Berkeley's awesome. You're crazy. I love Berkeley.
Until the riots start.
Even then, it's still fun.
Yeah. So Dan has been, well, a lot of you have probably gotten to know him, or some of you, through email and customer service tickets. But Dan, he's going to continue doing that, so we're not actually going to lose him. But this is his last chance to be in studio and give us some of his stories, which we'll get to in a little bit. And first, we're going to start off with Steve and some TYT news.
Yes, I'm going to get right to it. So the big news this week is that the Young Turks raised $20 million of funding to help grow our operations, and there's a lot of hubbub, and let me get right to it. So first of all, I want to put an end to any notion that this is some sort of selling out by Jank or anyone else. It's just absurd. So let me just give you a little backstory. Jank has had many opportunities to sell out, whatever that means, but let me get to that. So when he was at MSNBC, he was getting paid like almost 10 times more than what he was getting paid at TYT when he first started at MSNBC. They want him to tone down the rhetoric, and it was like a little mild on the fringes type of selling out. We just tone it down a little bit, and he wouldn't do it. So they want to move him to the weekends where he would work instead of 5 days a week, he would just work 2 days a week, and he would get a multi-year contract that would double his salary. So he's going to make somewhere in the mid six-figure range to high six-figure range the first year, and then it escalates up. And if he had done that, they would have also let him continue to run TYT. Then today, he could be making $3 million a year, $10 million a year, $20 million a year, like a lot of the other TV cable anchors are making. He turned it all down because he didn't want to sell out. So the notion that he's selling out now for $20 million doesn't help fund a large company that employs 70 people full-time and like another 30 or so contributors and part-timers is just silly on its face. So he could have sold out many times in the past. Secondly, we've had multiple opportunities over the years for this company to be, sold or bought or by a number of other actors. And we've always said no because of control issues, because they want to take over editorial, they want to do this, they want to do that. Several mainstream media companies, print publications that are very, very big, and you know their names, they wanted to buy us. And either a small portion or a large portion. And every step of the way, Jank always said no. A couple of times he and I disagreed. I thought it was a good opportunity for us to get some money into the company and help fund growth. But he thought it was not good because we would give up too much of our control. So he turned those down. There's an opportunity for us to get $20 million years ago if all he had to do was shut down Wolfpack. That's it. Just shut it down. And he turned down that opportunity. So he's had every opportunity along the way to sell out for millions and millions of dollars, and he never did. And that's part of our ethos here. I mean, we could have sold out by working with a number of advertisers over the years, but we didn't because we didn't believe in trying to sell these bad advertisers like, you know, for-profit colleges and oil companies onto our audience because that's just not a good fit. Secondly, it's also a good business decision because our whole business model is audience first. And our belief is that once you have the audience, then all the advertisers and everyone else, they have to come. So we don't want to chase them, we want them to chase us. Now that's a long-term plan because you got to build the audience. And for a long, long time, we've had no money. We pay ourselves very, very little. We pay our staff very, very little. And we have to duct tape everything. We have crappy equipment and facilities and all of that. That's all slowly changing because of our audience. Because we grew our large audience, and with the power of the audience comes the power of economics that follow. So that's our strategy, and that strategy has never changed. So yes, now we have $20 million, and what are we gonna do with it? Well, we're gonna power our growth, and let me tell you what that means. That means we're gonna have a number of things, such as better technical infrastructure. So right now, we don't have an app, a mobile app. That's ridiculous. But it costs like, you know, $100,000, $200,000 to build out an app. And everyone says, oh, no, I'll do it for free. I'll do this, I'll do that. And we've had that. Over the years, various generous members have contributed their time, their money, their efforts to develop an app that was okay, that kind of got us by. But what we want to do is stop doing that. We want to stop doing like little dinks and dunks to just get by. We want to actually have best of class technologies and opportunities to really super serve our existing audience and also to grow our audience and reach new audiences. So we want to have a much better app. We want to have a much better website. You guys know what a mess that is. So everything from the user interface to the functionality, we want to have all of that upgraded significantly. Also, we want to have more programming. And one of the things that I've been working on personally for quite a bit this whole calendar year is to develop a 12-hour programming block so we can become our own channel on the what I believe is a new cable world. So we all know traditional cable model is crumbling. They're bleeding subscribers. And what's happening now is all these over-the-top internet-only new cable operators called skinny bundles, pay TV, whatever name you like. Well, to get on that bundle, you gotta have 12 hours of programming. That costs money to do that. Secondly, even if we have the programming, to deliver that programming to those folks, we gotta have a massive build out of our infrastructure here technically. So just the equipment to record, transcode, and do all of that, and archive it and deliver it to these folks, because that has to be a live linear stream, and it also has to be available as a video on demand. Just the equipment costs $350,000. Just the equipment, let alone the maintenance of that, let alone the personnel required to operate it. So we're talking about real money to do real things, and the whole point of doing that 12-hour programming is so that we can be on what I think is the future cable. So when we're on those platforms, right next to MSNBC, right next to CNN, and we kick their ass because we have the audience, well, that gives our audience, that gives us a lot more power and a bigger platform to deliver our message. So right now we're doing great on YouTube, we're doing great on Facebook, we're doing great on every platform that we're currently on. But the world keeps changing. There are more platforms to be had. There are new ways of delivering your content. We want to go global with huge ambitions. You can't do any of this if you don't take any money. So the money comes in, and the investors, of course, are not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. It's not a charity. We're not a nonprofit. We want to make money. They want to make money. So that's why they are giving us the money, because they believe in our vision. They know that we have the audience, and with the audience comes the opportunity to grow our business and monetize that business. So there's no mistake in saying that the investors are seeking a return on their investment. But here's what they're not looking for. They're not gonna say to Cenk or Anna or to John Adarola or anyone on the on-air staff team or to production team, hey, cover this story. Don't say this, say that instead. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. First of all, these folks are institutional investors. They invest in a whole bunch of companies. And they don't ask people at those companies and here how to run their day-to-day operations on what stories to cover, what not to cover. Those decisions are entirely up to TYT. And if there was even a hint that there would be any influence or any pressure to do otherwise, we would have said no to this deal too. This is just a purely a business financial deal that allows us to build out our infrastructure, build out the data team, do more programming. There's absolutely no say whatsoever on who we cover and how we cover them. So that's the reality. In terms of what some of the investors, what their political philosophy is, whether, you know, we worked with the Romer Group before, those guys are conservatives. They don't share our political ideology at all, except for the one thing where they also agreed that money should be out of politics. These other guys, they are more of the mainstream Democratic Party. We know that, and they know where we stand. But they also understand that we are, I think TYT is not really left anymore. I mean, this is a new mainstream. So like millennials, and actually most of the country is actually super progressive. So we're not to the left of center. We are the center. I mean, we are, you know, every issue that we stand on, whether it's climate change or, you know, not having all these endless wars, whether it's LGBTQ rights, we are with the majority of people. We are mainstream there. So the investors, they get it. They understand that the audience that we serve, we have to keep serving them. That if they push us to the right or push us to the center, whatever that means, that's bad for business. So there's no desire on their part to push us in any direction. They are in it for the money, and in their opinion, they will make the most amount of money if they let us continue to do what we've always done, which is to super serve our audience and deliver news and commentary in a very authentic and honest way. And that's what we do here. And you know, Cenk, to his credit, has built out, I think, a pretty wide-ranging diversity of opinion, all the way from Michael Schur, who I disagree with almost all the time, to Jimmy Dore, who I usually agree with. And there's a lot of spectrum and there's a lot of space in between for Cenk, Anna, John, and you know, Brett, Hannah, myself, a lot of people to sit somewhere in that spectrum. And then we have reporters who are on the other side of the issues, and I disagree with them. So there's a big spectrum of philosophies and ideas. And you know, at our core, I believe that we're a challenger brand. And what I mean by us being challengers is that we challenge everything. We challenge conventional wisdom, we challenge the establishment, we challenge the status quo, and we challenge ourselves. And we have, you know, vigorous debate internally about how we see things. What I don't like are the fake debates where you don't even agree on the facts. So people think, you know, if you think that we live on a flat earth, I don't really care to talk to you because that's not a productive argument. You know, I want to have a nuanced discussion and debate on how best to move forward, not on the basic facts of whether we live on a flat earth or not. So again, I want to, and by the way, guys, what I say, what any one of us says here today means nothing. Just watch how we are. And if you think that we're selling out, if you think we're softening our coverage for this or for that or for access, well, then you have every right to stop funding us, stop watching us, and you can walk away and vote with your pocketbook, vote with your you know, mobile devices or however you consume our content. But I can assure you that that's just not going to happen. We are the company that we've always been. We're not selling out now, and we're not going to sell out later. The whole point of the folks that we've partnered with on this capital raise is to find partners that support our vision, that support a long-term growth plan. We're not in it to just make a quick buck. I mean, Cenk's been doing this for 15 years. And again, we have a track record of turning down every single opportunity to sell out, and we'll continue to do that. So for those who have concerns, I hope I address some of those concerns. For those who support us throughout everything, great. Again, we deeply appreciate your support, and we never would have gotten here without your support. But I ask all of you to keep holding us to account. Keep asking those questions. Be tough on us. I'm not afraid of that. Like, we're up to the task, and that's the way we are. I mean, you know, we get criticized sometimes by mainstream politicians, like, oh, we shouldn't criticize the DNC. No, we're gonna criticize them because they purport to represent us. So I want to hold them to account. I criticize Mitch McConnell less because he doesn't want my vote. He doesn't ask for my vote. He doesn't say he represents me. But Kamala Harris wants my vote. She wants me to support her. So then I'm going to hold her to account. Same way, we want to represent you guys. We want to serve you guys. We're asking you for your money and for your support. So you guys hold us to account, and you tell us how you feel. But just know that even if we disagree on certain things, like, you know, I mean, it's impossible to please every single one of our millions of fans. So whatever take we have on any news item, it's a genuine take, and you can disagree with us. And you can say that we're wrong, but it's never, ever because someone else told us to say something or to think something. So there have been times, for longtime viewers, you know, there have been times when Cenk and I were screaming at each other on air. I would call him a fucking idiot, and he would scream at me. that's not choreographed. We have a genuine difference of opinion. And when Michael Tracy disagrees with Michael Schur, that's a genuine difference of opinion. And no one's telling Michael Tracy to say something or Michael Schur to say something. No one's ever telling Cenk, none of it. It's all genuine. So I hope that you guys trust us. Well, thank you for the trusting us all this time. I hope the trust continues. And like I said, keep holding us to account. Anything to add, Dave?
Nothing to add. That's more inside baseball than we've done in the past few weeks, so I think people will appreciate that. And the first reaction to that we hope to see in the comments, and there'll be a lot of questions and comments on what you said, and we'll just talk about those next week after we've had a chance to read them.
Yeah, and just one more thing. Like, there's some concern that one of the investors is now on the TYT board. Like, that's not really a concern at all. I mean, they are minority shareholders. And what they want to do by being on the board is to help guide business decisions. So for example, should we devote more resources to our YouTube platform, or should we devote them to our Facebook platform? Should we try to launch TYT Germany? Should we try to launch TYT Portugal? Like, these are business decisions that they will help us make. They, because of their business contacts, they can introduce us to, let's say, you know, a large media company in some other part of the world that we might want to do business with. Those kind of things. That's what they're for. I mean, they're not on the editorial board.
There's no editorial board.
Yeah, there is no editorial board. The editorial board is basically Cenk, Anna, and Irina, John Iderola, and a few others, Amir, and these folks who are in the production meetings on a daily basis. So that's what it is.
And of course, you know, most of what you're talking about is because that was what the members care about, the news, politics, programming, and the editorial side of that. We have all the other programs, sports, movies, pop culture. We hope to improve and grow programs as well. It might be of less interest to the members, but I'd like to change that. I'd like to make those good enough so that that you do care about. Everybody out there cares about something else other than news and politics. You got to be a sports fan or a movie fan.
That's right. And some of the decisions that some of the investors will help us make are things like, well, should we have a separate app for every single channel? Mm-hmm. Should we have one big TYT app for all of our channels? And what does that mean, you know, a year from now when we have additional channels or we kill some of the existing channels? I don't know what the future holds in terms of our programming, but those are like business decisions, you know? So I welcome that kind of help and assistance. You know, a lot of times I'm running around, you know, trying to help, you know, build our company and, you know, get on more platforms and make sure that we have the best opportunities on each platform. So when Facebook launches this new product or that new product and YouTube does this and that, you know, TYT is first and foremost and at the top of their list. So some of the investors have really good relationships with some of the executives at these companies. So they can say, hey guys, why don't you talk to Steve at TYT so you guys can work out a really good deal so we can monetize better? Those kind of things. So there's nothing even remotely impacting on the editorial side at all.
That's right.
Dan, any questions, concerns? I mean, you're here every day, even though you're an intern. You're here all the time. I mean, do you foresee any issues with getting this investment?
Not really. I mean, like you said, I've been interning here more or less since high school, and then like even work here in the summers. And like I've had many other opportunities to work at other like organizations thanks to TYT. And like I turn them down because I like genuinely working here. I like the environment. I like that I have freedom. I like that I can like call Hassan a moron, even though it's Cenk's nephew. No one gets mad at me. I can never do that anywhere else. Like I can have these differences of opinions, and that's always protected. And I think that's like perfectly clear to the audience, because if there were some way where we're trying to have some sort of editorial control over opinions, then there wouldn't, like aggressive progressives wouldn't exist. Like all the differing opinions that are out there wouldn't exist, because we'd be on message more.
By the way, I saw a comment that said something like, oh, now with this new investment, the donors or the investors, because they love Hillary Clinton, they're gonna kill off aggressive progressive.
And the proof, no, you'll see they're a month not. From now, yeah. They'll still be an aggressive progressives.
If anything, it'll just get more aggressive.
Yeah.
Because now you have the resources to, I mean, like there have been some great interviews where like Jimmy Dore gets to interview like a couple politicians that are coming up.
Yep.
That requires infrastructure, that requires resources. And so it's not like, I mean, the way I kind of understand it is it's not like you're giving the resources and you're getting the money and you're going to change all of those things, or like mm-hmm. you're going to change because you have the resources. You're taking what we're already doing at TYT and saying, okay, now we have the resources to kick it into overdrive. We have the resources to expand. And that's what we've been doing on a smaller level every single year I've been here. We have a little more revenue, so we can expand a little bit more. But now we can just like accelerate that expansion.
Yeah, and we could do like little things like our Pittsburgh office. We have like four people jammed into a tiny, tiny space, and they pay like $300 a month for rent. Okay, I mean, let's get them a real space so they can actually do some work, and they're not on top of each other. Let them turn on the air conditioning when it gets hot. Those kind of things, right? I would love to have an office in New York, have some sort of space, because we have a bunch of folks in New York who have to work out of their homes because we don't have an office or studio there. So these are some of the things that money allows you to have that is not just added comfort, but allows us to work more efficiently, more productively, and allows the company to grow and have a bigger voice and more influence, and again, serve a bigger audience.
Yeah, so when Dan started this summer, he's been here many times. I said, you're into politics. Why are you here again? Shouldn't you go to Washington and do something different in politics directly? And he said, no, what I like is TYT. And I kept insisting, well, do something different. And then I said, all right, I get it. He likes it here, good. So one of the reasons he likes it here is for the rare opportunities like this where he can get on air.
It's also for the free bagels on Wednesdays.
Free bagels on Wednesdays and occasional paychecks. Yes, that's why I love it.
So you have two stories for us, and we're going to jump into it now.
Yeah, so I guess the first one we're going to talk about is the whole situation surrounding North Korea and like how to address that. And remember, this is taped on Thursday, so if the nukes drop on Friday, we don't know. but I'm kind of... Especially with Steve, I want to get your take since you're like on the aggressive progressive side of things. And this is something that I've noticed is that on CNN, when they've been talking about like this nuclear threat and Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump bolstering back and forth, it looks like the war is about to start. Like you never watch TV and like back when the Moab was launching and they were just showing that 6-second loop of like the bomb going up in the air. Like that's what CNN is doing. That's what it looks like the mainstream media is doing. So do you think that, I mean, maybe I'm kind of leading that question there, but do you think that it's this sort of fear is justified, that the media kind of revving up this idea of war is like, is there any justification? Is it worse now because Trump is wilder? Because Kim Jong-un's made some of these threats before. He makes these threats all the time. I have a friend in Guam who's like, no, yeah, we're kind of used to that. That happens all the time. It's not really phasing us. Apparently, there are people in South Korea who feel much the same. So I guess I kind of want to know what you feel about that.
I totally agree. The media is awful, awful. And the media is the reason why we had the Iraq War in 2003.
Right.
Because all the lies out of the Bush administration were just printed and hyped up by mainstream media. So the mainstream media, I don't know that they have this like, unprofessional, Dave. I don't know. Why don't you just turn it off? Just turn it off.
Yeah, all right.
Turn off the ringer.
It's Friday postgame show.
Yeah.
Do it live.
Yeah, so they do it for ratings. You know, they want to scare people and everything is hyped up. Everything's hyped up, whether it's...
You see, that's why you don't do it.
How hard is it to just turn off the sound?
Apparently not so easy.
Unbelievable.
I turned one sound off and another one came on.
With the funding, we'll be able to get tech support people that'll be able to help Dave with these issues.
We need training on how to use our phones during taping.
I was once doing jury duty, sorry to interrupt, and some guy's cell phone rang. The judge, of course, was furious, but he gave him a chance. He said, turn off your phone, don't make any more noise. So the guy went to turn off his phone, and then he made a song when it turned off. And then the judge said, well, fuck that, and then he took the phone away.
Yeah, that guy was probably Dave Kohler.
No, it wasn't Dave. I turned my phone off before I went in the courtroom. I have respect for our judicial system.
Just like hold the volume button down. It'll go all the way down.
So on the iPhone, that other thing rang. I don't even know how.
There's a switch right here. And just flip it downward and that's it. There's
right,
no
he hasn't
sound.
Got an iPhone, but you just hold the volume button on Android.
Anyway, let's continue about the media hype on North Korea. Yeah,
the media hype is horrible. It's horrible. And look, Trump is already a bad guy with a bad temperament. And just a fragile ego, and he's deeply unpopular, and he craves that popularity. And the best way for him to get popular is to be warlike. So the media was giving him a lot of crap, rightfully so. But then when he launched those missiles into Syria, what happened? What happened when he did
big,
that?
Big, beautiful bombs.
Big, beautiful bombs.
He became a president today. Last night.
And the media stroked him and just cuddled him and kissed him all over his face about how wonderful and amazing he is.
Yeah, a little thrill up the leg.
Yeah. No, there was a tingle up the leg. All that stuff. The media just, they promote this aggressive, warlike behavior. And if you don't do that, then they deride you as being soft or weak or somehow deficient. And so Trump, of course, he's going to ratchet up the rhetoric. That gives him so much attention. So will this ratcheting up of the rhetoric result in something ratcheting out of control and then something horrible and cataclysmic happening? Possibly. But I talk to people in South Korea, and whenever the media hype happens here in the US, they just laugh at it. They're like, no, we don't care. But they also have to think that way because they can't live in constant fear.
Right.
Because they're, I think, like 40 or 50 miles or minutes from the border of North Korea. So they can't live in fear that at any moment they're gonna be wiped out from either conventional or nuclear bombs. But the other point that I was making on this topic on aggressive progressives was the world has learned by our behavior, by the behavior of the United States, that they should never, ever give up their nukes, ever. Because the moment you give up your nukes, then they can and will often actually invade you. So Gaddafi was a very stark example for them. And the North Korean ministry has talked about how Gaddafi has been an example for them. Gaddafi gave up his nuclear and chemical weapons program in 2003, and George Bush said, this is great, we want this to be a model for the world, and any leader who gives up their nuclear ambitions will be rewarded with a much better relationship with the United States and the Western world. And then when Gaddafi was having trouble with rebels inside his country, we backed the rebels, and we allowed the rebels to capture him, sodomize him with a bayonet, and then execute him. So we would have never done that had he had nukes. We can't invade Libya if they have nukes. We can't invade Pakistan because Pakistan has nukes. We certainly can't invade China, they have nukes, India, Russia, so on and so forth. So the lesson, and also Iraq, we wouldn't have invaded Iraq if Saddam Hussein had nukes. So the lesson that we just told the world is, hey, pursue the nukes at all costs. And you know, threaten immediate use of those nukes if people get even close to you. It'll back them off. So this is not entirely on Trump. Of course, Trump is a horrible person to be in the position that he is right now because he's so unstable and volatile. But this problem with North Korea and with Trump goes back multiple administrations. So the failure of the Obama administration, failure of the Bush administration, so on and so forth, and our overall failure with our foreign policy, because our foreign policy is predicated not on achieving global peace, but achieving global discord so we can prop up the defense industry. It justifies more and more spending on more and more wars and defense buildup. Defense budgets don't get cut, they always get increased, no matter what, in good times and bad. So that's the situation that we have. That's why we sell so many arms to horrible places like Saudi Arabia and Iraq, where it's mired in strife, because we make money from it. If we really cared about fighting terrorism, we would stop that. We would stop selling arms to certain territories. If we really cared about terrorism, we would regulate the banks so they can't funnel money to the terrorists, but we don't care. We need to allow the banks to thrive. We need to allow the military industrial complex to thrive. So that's what our foreign policy is built on. It's not built on actually achieving peace. Am I too cynical? Am I too aggressive? Am I too progressive?
No, that was a really rational point.
Okay, but the thesis is the media is overhyping the North Korea thing. The North Korea standoff with the US, first of all, it's just a rhetoric standoff at this point, kind of dangerous because both sides are armed with destructive weapons.
And both sides will act on rhetoric.
Of course the media is overhyping it, but how much are they overhyping?
Yeah.
It is important and frightening to some degree. Or do you not agree with?
No, no, I tend to agree that it's important and frightening. Although, like Steve's point about how this is the result of years of failed policy where we've been kind of showing the wrong incentives when it comes to nuclear power. I'm not, or like nuclear weapons. I'm not sure what the right incentives would have been. Like, how do you achieve the ultimate goal of making sure that we don't have countries randomly threatening to nuke each other every like couple years while, like, I guess controlling it in a way so you don't incentivize using nukes as like some sort of power? I mean, what system would be better than what we have right now?
Yeah, so I heard, I was listening to NPR today, Max Baucus was on the radio, and Max Baucus is he's a former senator from Montana, and he used to work on this North Korea issue, I think under the Bush administration. And what he was saying, which I kind of agree with, is that we have to come to terms with the fact that North Korea is a nuclear state now. Either they actually have it or they're on the precipice of having it, and we're not gonna really invade them and stop that. We're not gonna take out their ability to achieve their mission of becoming a nuclear state. And just as we have contained the nuclear threat in Pakistan, which is really full of incredibly hostile forces, and just as we've kind of reached some sort of understanding and agreement with China and these other nuclear powers, we need to somehow get there with North Korea. We can't pretend anymore that North Korea, that their nuclear ambitions is something that we can stop. I don't think we can stop it without having just a massive, massive war in that part of the world where I would say millions of people would die in South Korea, yeah, and Japan and China. And China has to be a big part of this. You can't just have the US dictate what's gonna happen over there. China has to be an active participant in what goes down. So I think that's where we are.
If I could bring this back to a local thing about Democratic Party strategy, because for a while I've been saying that, and I think pretty much everyone at this table would agree, that the Democrats can't just be the anti-Trump party. They have to actually stand for something. They have to stand for issues and ideas and policies, right? But do you think that the relative possibility of like some sort of like nuclear conflict would be enough for Democrats to say, no, yeah, we're anti-Trump? Do you think that fear of a nuclear conflict would be enough for Democrats to be able to maybe use that fear to their advantage and saying, no, this is just one, this is the most extreme example of why Trump is a dangerous president, why the Republicans are okay with having him in for opportunistic reasons. They think Trump is worth more to them in office than not in office. Can Democrats run on that? Can Democrats run on the fact that Republicans are being kind of cowardly right now, I would say?
Well,
is that strong enough?
Well, what they should have done, what Hillary should have done, is Hillary should have tied Trump to all Republicans. But she kept saying, he's not a real Republican. He's not like the other Republicans.
And that was a strength, because there are a lot of people in Trump's base who were like, yeah, he's not like other Republicans.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, she totally played that wrong. And what she did was she actually hurt her own party, all the down votes, because what she should have said is, yeah, he's a Republican. He's a leader of the party. And if you like him, or rather, if you vote Republican, you're voting for him. And because he's a deeply unpopular person, even when he was campaigning, and that hurt all the, you know, House races and Senate races for the Democrats. But that said, running on just that, even now, running on just, well, I'm not Trump, I'm better than Trump, and I'm better than Republicans who support Trump, that's just not a winning message. It's just not. Like, you have to inspire people to come out, give up a Tuesday. A lot of folks are working class people who get paid on an hourly basis, who can't afford to take a lot of time off. You gotta inspire these people to go out there and vote. And you're not gonna do it just by saying, well, I'm not that guy. Like, you have to give them a real hope that by their voting, they would have a better future. And the Democrats have not given that message. Dave?
No, I want to move on because we got some other stuff to talk. And the whole thesis here was about the media coverage of North Korea, and we barely talked about that, is okay.
Yeah, it's simple.
We talked about the threat itself, and we talked about whether the threat is something we should really trust. And
all right,
from
guess,
right?
All right, let's play a game.
Okay.
Let's pretend Hillary won, and she's the president. What would she have said right now? She would have said, North Korea better not threaten us because they will see fire and fury like the world has never seen before. She won't say that. Right. But what would she have said? She would have said, all options are on the table. We are very, very serious about our security and the security of our allies. And North Korea really better get their act together.
But would we have gotten to this point? So because this is a back and forth between like Trump unnecessarily
provoking. We would have definitely gotten to this
point.
Because this point was just Kim Jong-un testing a few missiles. Yeah. That's what got us to this point.
Yeah, but it was Kim Jong-un testing a few missiles. And then like Donald Trump going away from the usual like Hillary Obama, we have weapons and we'll all options are on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And Trump went from, no, we could nuke you whenever we want to. And I'm unpredictable, so you never know what I'm going to do. Like, I think there's an escalation aspect of that that Trump made worse, that Hillary.
Well, the rhetoric, absolutely. He definitely ramped up the rhetoric, of course. And no one's going to amp it up the way he did. Like, you know, Hillary wouldn't have done it. Obama certainly wouldn't have done it. I don't think any Republican would have done it. John McCain wouldn't have done it. No one would have ramped it up the way Trump did. But my point is, okay, the rhetoric hasn't ramped up. And then the media comes in, just like just throws fire all over and ramps up even more. But at the end of the day, we would be in the same situation under any president as we have right now with Trump, except for the phrase fire and fury. Like, just take that part out.
I still think the
I don't know that that is enough to take us from, you know, it's not so bad to holy shit, now it's cataclysmic. Cataclysmic, yeah.
I still believe that the escalation that we've gotten to this point where literally we don't know. There's been a communication issue with generals, where like the generals don't even know what Trump is gonna say or what Trump is gonna do before Trump.
He's dumb because Trump doesn't know it either. He just says things like
he doesn't get the weight of the situation. And because he doesn't get the weight,
he doesn't even know which way our military ships are traveling.
Right.
And he makes random comments. He says things that are classified information.
I believe based on that incompetence, that should be.
He's like, massively incompetent, yes. Like, I
the Democrats should be hammering him on that.
On his incompetence?
Yeah, but like incompetence matched with, like incompetence to the, like there's whatever incompetence based on, oh, he can't do the economy or he can't get jobs, right? But there's incompetence, this is on a nuclear scale, like millions of lives could be at stake potentially. You don't want incompetence here.
Yeah. I mean,
and the Democrats should be running on.
I think they're doing that. I mean, aren't they doing that?
The Democrats should be doing that for what? You're talking about an electoral strategy. We don't need an electoral strategy right now. The Democrats don't have any power. They can make him go lower in the opinion polls, but that's happening anyway. So I don't know what.
They can, the same way the Republicans like Paul Ryan and like, even in the media, I guess, like even the Democratic pundits, the same way that Republican pundits on the other end, they really put people's feet to the fire and like had this narrative where
the
Democrats are like super weak. I think the Democrats need to be stronger on that.
Nobody needs to be told that Trump is incompetent. Everyone knows that. People who still support him,
the Republicans are, but that incompetence is not scaring elected Republicans.
No, the elected Republicans are absolute craven cowards. They're not gonna ever do anything against Trump unless they think doing so helps them politically.
Right.
So do they know that he's incompetent? Of course they know. Of course they know. And right now, they already have. So Trump is kind of a fight with his own attorney general. He's now in a fight with Mitch McConnell, head of the Senate. So, head of the Republicans in the Senate. So there's no reason to necessarily harp on, if you're a Democrat, oh, Trump is incompetent. He's incompetent. Everyone knows that already. But doesn't matter how incompetent he is, he's gonna maintain his base of like 30% of Americans who are crazy. They'll always support him no matter what. He could say, I wanna kill every single person who is of X ethnicity. They will still support him. It doesn't matter. What they need to do is figure out how to get other people to believe that they are any better. And it can't just be like, well, I'm not as incompetent as that guy. That just doesn't work. So, in terms of getting rid of him, if your goal is to get him out of office right now,
kind of,
it's really up to the Republicans, and they're never going to do that until they think it's politically expedient. They're just not going to do it.
I guess I'm just depressed that nuclear threats are not political expediency for them, but I'm willing to accept that, and I'm fine to move on too.
Yeah.
So another thing I want to talk about is this narrative on the right that Trump is doing so much better for the economy. And look in all the 7 months he's done, look at all the progress he's made that is all entirely attributable to him. And I want to research this because we just had a conversation about Trump's total incompetency. And so it's not like, I want to see what aspects he's doing well for the stock market and job market and housing market and which parts he isn't. I'm cutting this down a little bit, but I don't know if you can get the graphics ready that I sent you. So can we get the first one up actually? Perfect, yeah. So here's the unemployment rate, and people will argue that the unemployment rate is lower than ever under Donald Trump. When you actually just look at the larger graph and not just look at 2017, you see it's just part of an obvious larger trend. And basically Trump is just riding along the successes of like Obama administration policy, at least when it comes to the unemployment rate. There's also worth knowing that just like under the Obama administration, the highest growing part of the labor market are low wage jobs, and those wages aren't going up. So Trump keeps promising better jobs, and then he's saying, look at all the winning we're doing with jobs. But like, as it's obvious right now, he didn't do anything to help that. And he's not really addressing the low wage jobs issue. So I hope that kind of bites him back in the ass.
Well, what some people, just to argue for argument's sake, a lot of businesses say, well, two things we know about Trump, he's gonna try to lower taxes, and he kind of believes in this infrastructure spending, even though he hasn't done either of those two yet. Some economists argue that that has put a little confidence into business owners, which helps them hire and expand. And so, yeah, economy and politics, of course, is complicated, and so many factors are interrelated, and some of it is all future anticipation versus facts of the day. And it's the oldest argument in American politics. Does the president have that much direct control over the economy, and how quickly and to what extent? But yeah, Trump, in terms of what he's actually done, is almost nothing.
Right, just a lot of
the only thing he could argue is the two things I said. He intends to lower taxes and spend money on infrastructure, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I actually give him credit for the little bump in the stock market, because, well, that stock market has been doing great under Obama as well. But that's not a good indicator of how healthy the economy is.
Right.
That's a good indicator of how healthy those companies are, mm-hmm. and how the heads of those companies are doing really, really well. So if you're in the top 0.1%, you know, you're doing better than ever before.
Yeah, 50% of Americans don't participate in the stock market.
Yeah.
And so these gains are shifted towards a specific population.
Right, and of the 50% that do, only like 10% have a really meaningful stake in it. Others just like smaller investments that's not a game changer. So the reason for that bump is because, you know, he's signaling deregulation. So companies are able to do things that are more profit driven, and they don't care as much about some of the requirements that they have to follow. So yes, they'll get a bump, but that does not mean that it's good for the economy. It doesn't mean that it's good for our society. It just means that certain companies are gonna do better under a more laissez-faire administration. On the unemployment numbers, we're really like at the point where it can't get any lower. I mean, you could pretend that it is, but it doesn't really matter. So like whether it's like 4.7 or 4.9, they're the same. It's really at that point, much of it is based on accounting. How do you account for the unemployment rate? I'm using finger quotes for those who are listening on podcasts. Because there are folks who just dropped out of the job market and they don't count for anything. I know one of the statistics that the Clinton administration used when Bill Clinton was president is how many black males got jobs or whatever, and how their unemployment rate dropped. Well, they weren't counting all the African-American males who were incarcerated through mass incarceration. They were just taken out of the denominator.
They're only using people in the labor market.
Yeah, so the percentage looks better. But again, you can fudge the numerator and the denominator to make your numbers look how you want them to look. So there's a lot of that happening in the unemployment numbers. And of course, the most important thing is, okay, so you have a job, but what does that mean? Is it a good job with prospects for a better future, or is it just a job in description only that is really just, you know, indentured servitude or a dead end job with no prospects for a real economic opportunity for you and your family going forward.
Yeah. And that's unfortunately what was growing under the Obama administration and continues to happen under the Trump administration, where even though, like you correctly said, Dave, that markets do react to confidence, and there's not just consumer confidence, but there's confidence on the supply side, those gains are really not going down to the rest of the country. They're not leaving outside of that like hyper, like quick money business sector. And so that's like one major problem coming from it. And yeah, just about the stocks, even today, I think the stocks are actually down for today.
Today specifically.
Yeah. today specifically, but that's not even like a specific thing.
And actually yesterday, if you're listening to this.
Oh, right, yesterday. But the main thing I also wanted to point out is that a lot of the gains in the S&P 500, of the like profits that have been made, 40% of those profits are from overseas interaction. So in addition to other things, what the stock market is showing is that overseas companies or companies that are doing business overseas are doing well because the global economy is thriving, which is funny because like a bunch of Trump supporters hate the idea of globalism and working together. So it's showing that, hey, when you have a global economy, things can thrive, things can work better, market efficiencies can occur in some ways, and profits can be had. It's just a matter of, okay, these numbers and these economic indicators are great, but what's it gonna matter for that coveted blue-collar coal worker that Trump, the rest of the media keeps talking about? And I don't think those gains are going to do much for Trump other than just make him look nice on numbers and make him claim that, oh, the media's not reporting the good things. See how they're lying? It's just a tool for them.
Yeah, and you know, the second quarter growth this year is almost identical to the second quarter growth last year.
Correct.
It's like a shade above. And the total and the growth from 2015 versus now is actually slower than it was in 2015. So again, like these numbers for, you know, the general economic state of the country, you can slice and dice them in ways to make them look, you know, much better than they are. Of course, the overall picture is that the economy right now, again, is healthy from the perspective of the stock market and unemployment numbers, and they have been that way for a while, but they're not healthy for many ordinary Americans.
Yeah. Much of what I got out of this is that the things that are going well are mostly going well because they've been going well in the past before Trump. Because Trump is signaling deregulation, that's a good market signal for the very rich. But things are looking like the beginning of potentially a rough point if the status quo continues and Trump continues to deregulate and cut taxes on the rich like it seems like he's going to do. It looks like we're seeing the beginning of a downward trend that is totally gonna screw over
the middle class, just in time
for me to graduate.
No, that'll hit just in time for when the next Democrat gets elected so that Democrat takes over with a collapsing economy.
All economics is a cycle. Stop thinking politicians can do much. It's almost my
starting point.
Did you have a thing you wanted to do after this, or?
No, because there's not enough time. Though there's a story I didn't want to do that fits in nicely with this, so it'll only take a minute, and then we'll go to the Hall of Fame. But in France, Emmanuel Macron was elected, promising to globalize and modernize the French economy. So there's a shipping company, a ship manufacturer in France, that the socialist president Hollande arranged to be open to foreign investment. And now an Italian conglomerate wanted to buy it. And Macron, who promised to open the French economy to the world, is going to nationalize that because he doesn't want that Italian company to buy it because that Italian company is partially owned by the Italian government. And he doesn't want a French military and economic interest to be owned partially by the Italian government. So what the politicians say and what they do and how they handle the economy, it's constantly against what your expectations are, what their own rhetoric is. There's hypocrisy, there's this unexpected consequence, unintended consequences, unexpected results. But you know, that's France's America, but it's the same. A lot of the concepts are the same. You can't, it takes a long time to evaluate the impact of any president or prime minister on his economy.
Yeah, and these people are politicians first, maybe lawyers second, and almost rarely ever like actual economists or people who have the good sense to get together and like really iron out these plans and these concerns before they campaign on them. And things obviously always change. You just can't take a president's word seriously on every single one of these things.
So before we wrap, I have a whole bunch of stories, but they're gonna have to wait till next week.
We can go another 10
I don't
minutes.
Want to. They'll go better next week or in some special, extra special.
What is the Hall of Fame stuff you're talking about?
That's what we're going to do now.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so
that's Dan's story.
One of the things I do here at TYT is I manage the support at TYT Network account. So if you have one of the many possible problems you can have with the website, those emails usually get read by me, occasionally Gigi. There's Zoe, who's a new person. But every once in a while, people just send like the absolute stupidest messages. And I wanted to point out some of the three best ones just because I'm kind of a fun end to the post game. I know you're going to get you're going to love these, Steve. Can you put up the first one, Irma? So yes, Donald Trump is very intelligent. Trump is 1,000 times more intelligent than Cenk Uygur. Stop the imitation, Cenk Uygur, to make believe has your public the weak one that Donald Trump is an idiot. One cannot be idiotic when one is not billionaire. It is necessary to be very, very intelligent to succeed like Donald Trump. But Cenk, you are a liar and a manipulator, and with final, the malicious one. Your owner, Cenk, uses a Wikipedia article to an Islamic word. He likes Satan, Cenk.
At least he spelled Cenk Uygur's name correctly twice.
Yeah, but like none of that made any sort of sense. And that
people, I actually wonder if that's even a real message.
Yeah, it sounds it was.
Like, is this person real? Or are they just trying to say crazy things to have people like you read it?
See, it seems like a troll until they go through all the effort to bring up that like one word, the Islamic tradition, which I looked at it. It basically just means when you hide your faith for fear of persecution.
Yeah.
So the fact that he went into more detail in that makes me think that maybe he was serious or maybe he was just.
Well, clearly it's a foreigner who doesn't speak English or write English very well and tried his best.
Or it could be an American who doesn't speak or write English very well and tried their best.
That was a Muslim Middle Easterner or something like that. I'm glad that came to customer support. Yeah, we were all over
that.
Yeah,
I was glad I was able to help fix that problem. Yeah. Can we go to the next one? Cenk, prove that you're a US citizen. Anna, sit up straight and stop slow blinking, damn it. Sent from Yahoo Mail on Android.
So they think Anna's slow blinking messages?
What's slow blinking?
It's when you give messages through.
No, I think they're saying that Anna's stupid. And she just sit there just blinking slowly like a dummy. And Cenk is a illegal immigrant. I think that's what they're trying to get at.
These are the people who say you're sold out. Stop taking it seriously. Not all of them, it's just this case. And the last one, which should be my favorite. I'll just read to the gist of it. I'm curious about the credentials one receives by paying a higher amount. I was wondering if the producer category makes a person a legitimate producer on the show complete responsibilities. I know TYT hires their own producers and was wondering if there's a difference between the membership producers and the people who work for your organization, aside from simply being an official employee. Would it be safe to put producer for the Young Turks as a credential on a resume if I signed on to the producer membership? Steve, I'd like to know this. I'd like to beef up my resume. Can I do this?
Sure, go for it.
Awesome.
Well, that's my answer too. You put any goddamn thing you want on your resume. Why are you asking us?
I mean, would it be fair?
I'm surprised that we haven't gotten that one many times. Ever since we established those membership levels, producer, executive producer, which I never really liked. I was wondering why people were going to start asking that question. So yeah, I want to be a producer. Here's my $100 a month. Here's the 5 stories I want to run. But I'm surprised it happens so rarely.
Are you going to put yourself down as a reference for him?
That I won't do. But on your own resume, put whatever you want. Why are you asking us?
If they're producers and they pay money and they give us stories, will you listen to them? And if you do, then
whether they're a member or not a member or a producer or not a producer or pays, sends an interesting story and I happen to read it and I want to talk about it on the Friday Post Game Show, of course I'll listen to it.
But their money doesn't.
The money doesn't.
Just making sure. I'm just keeping you honest. All right, I guess that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, that's it for this Friday postgame show. Thank you both, and have a good year at school.
Oh, also, shout out to this is the solar eclipse you did, right, Bert?
Right. The thing is, there's going to be another Friday postgame show before the solar eclipse, so solar eclipse fever is not at its peak yet.
That's a picture of a solar eclipse, and we have to give credit to Griffin.
He's a nerdy kid. He knows all the stuff. He's a smart kid.
Hey, before we go, I just got one thing to say. With that $20 million and the missiles getting ready to hit us sooner or later, can we throw a raging kegger?
I thought we were going to invest that money into a TYT bunker where we can do a show of like underground Fallout 4.
Nah, just go out with a bang. Just throw a kegger.
That's probably better.
And just play your end of the world jams, and that's all you need.
Steve, it's up to you.
It's not
please,
up to
Steve,
me.
Make the call. Make the call, Steve.
But I will authorize with your bagels, we'll also bring coffee.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Am I but not
we
generous?
We all have a coffee machine.
That's right. Yeah.
We could probably, if all you want is a kegger, just combining the money of the five people working on this show
how
right now.
How much does a kegger cost? A couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, but then you hire like a really good band, you know? Oh.
Like a Fat Rager. I guess
shit about a band. Yeah.
Those days are far behind me.
We didn't. I know you wanted us to talk about Glenn Campbell, probably.
Yeah. Oh, you guys bought it up.
We got to go.
All right. Anyway.
We're going to do another one next week. Thank you, everybody.
All right, members. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay strong.